Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com. Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com. Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
Sometimes the safest place is the most dangerous. You're tuned in to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring psychotherapist and author Siobhan Scott.
The trial of Richard Allen, it is taking place finally in Delphi. Judge Gull proceeding over all of the proceedings. We talked to Bob Mata, defense attorney, just the other day, who's in the courtroom. And despite all of the chaos that we saw going into this, everybody kind of looking at this going, is this going to be fair and just? He, who has been very critical of it, saying, yeah, in the courtroom when this is going on, everybody's very respectful, and it seems like a trial very much on the up and up. Joining me to discuss, Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author. It is a case, though, that is very heavily weighted on eyewitness testimony. We're hearing a lot of different testimony from people who were 16 at the time that they were out at the Monon High Bridge, where they claim they saw Bridge Guy, and now they're in adults. They're in their 20s. Also, a woman who goes out walking every day, enjoys that spot. I totally get that. Who knows the scene, knows what cars are parked there, what days, and her testimony also making some impacts in the court this week. Siobhan, let's start out by talking about eyewitness testimony in general and how reliable it is, how unreliable it is, and the fact that we're talking about people trying to recall an event from 2017.
Yeah, eyewitness testimony is notoriously unreliable, and there are just hundreds of cases of people who have been convicted over the decades based upon eyewitness testimony that we later find with other evidence, confessions, or DNA, sophisticated technology, we find that none of that was true. And so our brains create stories, and they try to fill in the blanks and fill in the missing pictures. And it's, you know, it's troublesome in a case like this where the stakes are so high.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly don't blame any of these people who are testifying, these witnesses, as like if they're trying to mislead, they're not. I mean, this is just it's how our brains work. It's literally filling in the missing blanks.
Fills in the blanks.
Yeah. We knew that the event occurred. We have the setting. We have all that. Now it's when it's recalled every time, our brain is like, okay, here's what's in that scene. Here's the pieces we're putting back into this puzzle. Because it's not like we're picking up off of a record or something and listening to that tape. It's being recreated every single time. Yeah. And let's talk about that, because we have one eyewitness, a middle-aged woman who is recounting it, and her recount of the scene actually adds up. We have video footage from the grocery store. We have video footage of the car, and all of her timestamps add up as to what she says happened, when they happened. Her big piece of testimony, which completely throws to the wind the timeline of the state, is that she says when she got off of the trail walking that day, Richard Allen's car, which she believes is right at the front of the trailhead, was gone. And the timing on that is key, because they're saying that's when he would have been down by the river killing the girls. But according to her, he already left the trail for the day. According to him, he had already left the trail for the day. As well. You have this other eyewitness testimony of people saying they saw Bridge Guy. These were 16-year-old girls at the time, now in their 20s, recalling this. Does age play a factor in recalling eyewitness testimony, especially when you're talking about years like that, going from teens to early 20s? I mean, those are some very interesting years in one's life of growth and such.
You know, I don't think we have data to show that memory becomes less reliable the younger you are, but it's certainly possible. To me, more than any eyewitness testimony, what would carry weight for me would be what did they find or not find on his computer or his other digital devices? Because we know that this was, by whomever the perpetrator was, it was a sexually motivated crime. And sex crimes, a person may never have actually committed one before, but they've been fantasizing about it for years or even decades. And the fantasy material is what you find digitally stored, because the person has been thinking about it and planning it and, you know, whatever they do when they're fantasizing about it, right? It's their form of sexual expression. And that has been going on and on and on. And so if they find absolutely no evidence of, you know, pornography of young girls or violent sexual acts, if they find no evidence of that, that would really tip the scales for me. Now, if they do find it, then it goes the other way. You have to really examine that really closely.
Could it be that he just was smart enough and knew how to delete that stuff off of his computer? Or is even that today one of those things where, yeah, that really doesn't work anymore?
No, like, it doesn't work. It's never gone. Anything that is in your computer, if you completely destroy the hard drive, then maybe it can't be recovered and they can't track you on the internet. But most people do not do that, which is why so many people get caught and convicted now.
And that's the thing. We haven't heard as of this moment in time, in the trial, of any digital footprint.
No.
I would almost
no.
think that this would have been brought up by now, unless we're waiting for some big gotcha moment. But it seems the strongest pieces of arguments that they have putting Richard Allen at the scene is an unspent bullet that was face down into the ground, and his admission that he was there that day, and all of these coerced confessions as well. Let's talk about the coerced or the confessions. And I'm jumping to conclusions by saying coerced, but I don't know, when you put somebody in a small solitary confinement room for years on end, a man that has no experience in a world like that, no convictions, no history. He worked at CVS, he had family, and suddenly he's there for years and you find him eating feces. And then you get a confession from him on a piece of paper. I don't know how, you know, accurate that is, especially when it looks like it might have been written by a crazy kindergartner, the way that piece of paper looked from what we saw.
Yeah, that's what makes this such an interesting puzzle, because obviously, I mean, in my opinion, the guy is psychotic, has been psychotic for some time now.
Sure.
It's really important to know the timeline of his mental health and psychiatric history. I heard from the defense some time ago that he, yes, he did have a history of depression. And then I heard from, you know, the government, the state at some point, that he was diagnosed with schizophrenia. And so we've got these different labels flying around. What do they mean? People with depression, you can have a very severe major depression that results in psychosis. Looking at the veracity of all of the, you know, the material that have been relayed as confessions, we need to know what his mental state at the time was. I've even heard one of the YouTube experts who's a psychologist saying that he believes he was faking the psychotic symptoms. I don't know that I've seen lots of people try to fake psychosis to get out of, you know, criminal responsibility. I've never seen anybody eat feces and take it to that extent. So that says to me he's legitimately psychotic. He looks psychotic to me. But we also know that psychosis can ebb and flow over the course of a life. So a person may be floridly psychotic at some times and not really appear psychotic at others. So some of them can function in a workplace as long as it's not a real demanding job. You can also look at it on a continuum. So a person can be a little psychotic and then maybe go into a really stressful situation and become very psychotic. And what we know about psychosis is that people will often confess to all sorts of things they didn't do. And so I think that's really critical, is this mental health trajectory with him and what really happened and when did it start and when were the various confessions made. And that doesn't mean that a psychotic person doesn't sometimes confess to something they really did. Maybe they do. But other times they'll confess to things they didn't do. And that just makes this all the more murky.
Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, thank you for your insight, as always, on this case. So here we are at the Richard Allen trial, finally unfolding after years of anticipation and so much speculation. With the testimony and evidence, it's all rolling out. The big question still remains, are we seeing justice served here? Or is this a case, yet another case? And another example of how unreliable eyewitness accounts and coerced confessions are, and how they can derail a fair trial with so much weight placed on memories that are years old. How much faith can we really put in them, especially when every retelling reconstructs the story just a little differently, filling in gaps with guesses instead of facts? Eyewitness testimony has always been a shaky foundation, and this trial seems to be built on it. Witnesses, now in their 20s, are recalling events from their teenage years, a time of rapid emotional and cognitive development. Their accounts are sincere, no doubt, but sincerity doesn't guarantee accuracy. Then there's a woman whose timeline disrupts the state's theory, suggesting that Richard Allen's car was gone from the trailhead long before the crime allegedly took place. It's these inconsistencies that make you wonder, what exactly is going on here? Are we building a case on truth or on a patchwork of fragmented memories? And let's not forget about the digital aspect or lack thereof. In today's world, where every fantasy leaves a digital footprint, the absence of incriminating content on Allen's devices should raise some eyebrows. If this was a sexually motivated crime, as the prosecution suggests, you'd expect to find some trace of those thoughts online, but so far nothing has emerged. No violent pornography, no suspicious searches. Could Allen really have covered his tracks that well? Or is it possible the evidence simply isn't there because he's not the perpetrator? Then we have the confessions. If you call them that, how reliable is a statement made by someone held in solitary confinement from years, suffering from severe mental illness, who's eating his own poop? We know he was diagnosed with schizophrenia, and even if that diagnosis is questioned, his behavior, eating feces, for example, suggests he was not exactly in a sound state of mind at the time of those confessions. When a confession is born of guilt, delusion, or sheer desperation, it doesn't really equate to a confession. Its credibility is not quite there. Ultimately, the case forces us to confront uncomfortable truths about how the justice system handles mental illness, or how they bring on mental illness to those that enter it. Psychotic individuals can confess to crimes they didn't commit, sometimes out of confusion, sometimes just to make the questioning stop. And yet dismissing their confessions altogether isn't the answer either. The real challenge lies in phasing out what's real and what's the product of a disordered mind. As the trial unfolds, we have to ask, are we looking at the right man, or are we watching a tragic miscarriage of justice in real time? And if Alan is found guilty, will it be because the evidence supports it, or because we're too afraid to admit that we don't really know what happened on that trail in 2017? I'm Tony Bruschi. If you want to stay up to date on this case and the others we cover, be sure to press subscribe. Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're in the thick of a true crime saga, every detail sinking in. And then, wham, a commercial about something you couldn't care less about. It's like being served a microwaved dinner at a five-star restaurant. But it doesn't have to be this way. Go for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. With True Crime Today Premium Plus, you get uninterrupted, ad-free episodes, extended interviews that dig even deeper into the muck, and early access so you can brag to your friends. It's like ordering the secret menu at a crime buffet. So, search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and savor every twisted detail without interruption.